So my talk will be about the question where you can make Bohmian mechanics relativistic. And this is a talk based on work with Detlef, Nino, Shelley, and Travis, all here. And the outline will be as follows. First, I will give a brief introduction to non-relativistic Bohmian mechanics. Stefan did a good job this morning already introducing it, so I can be very brief. Then I'll say something about non-locality, because non-locality is going to yield the main problem to have a relativistic Bohmian theory. And then I'll move on to relativistic Bohmian theories. So first we call it non-relativistic Bohmian mechanics, also known as pilot wave theory or de Broglie-Bohm theory, after the two people that invented it, de Broglie and Bohm. It's a theory about particles moving under the influence of the wave function. And the dynamics of the wave function is given by the usual Schrödinger equation, non-relativistic Hamiltonian. And the dynamics of the particles is given by the guidance equation. And that's a first order law. It gives you the velocity of the particles in terms of the wave function, which is of this form. Can be written as the gradient of the phase, where the phase of the wave function is defined as follows. Okay, so again, you've seen this morning. I'll show it again. This is the double slit experiment. These are the possible trajectories the particle can take. So each time you run the experiment, you fire one particle, and one of these trajectories is realized. And you see that particles tend to end up where the interference is constructive. They avoid regions where the interference is destructive. Okay. And there's also, and the statistics comes out by assuming that you have a quantum equilibrium distribution. So you assume that the distributions of particles at a time is given by the modulus of psi squared. Okay, and once you have this distribution of particles, then you have agreement with quantum theory. Okay. And Bohmian mechanics, well, it's local, we've already heard that. And the way it shows up is that if you look at the guidance equation, this velocity law, you see that the instantaneous velocity of one particle depends on the positions of all the other particles at that time. And this dependence on the other particles doesn't fall off with the distance, like in Newtonian mechanics. So this is the source of the non-locality. And there is a nice illustration of that by Dean Rice, published in American Journal of Physics. And it goes as follows. If you first consider a single particle, okay, a single particle with a certain wave function, so you have a particle source over here, and you fire particles towards a beam splitter, and the beam splitter causes the packet to split. One packet that goes through, one packet that goes that gets reflected. And assume these have equal amplitude, so you get a perfect symmetric setup. So you have a wave packet going through, and here you have a mirror, so the wave packet bounces off the mirror, goes down. Here you have a wave packet that gets reflected here to the mirror, and goes up. So in this region here, you get interference. And in the end, you will find 50% up, 50% down, so there's perfect symmetry. Now, in the Bohmian theory, I've drawn two possible trajectories, so the solid one, solid blue one, and the dotted blue one. So the solid blue one is going to make this funny movement here, which you wouldn't expect at first. And another possible trajectory is this one, like this, also this funny movement. And the reason you can see that you will have this kind of behavior is because you have first order dynamics. So if you would assume that this particle just bounces off this mirror and goes down, then because the setup is completely symmetric, there would also be the possibility that the particle bouncing off this mirror here would just go up. So these trajectories would cross each other at the same time. So they would have these trajectories would have at some time the same position, but would evolve differently. because you have a first order dynamic, that cannot happen. Initial position determines the full trajectory. Okay. So you know you're going to have some behavior like that. Okay. Now to two particles. These two particles are assumed to be in some entangled state. I've drawn it like this, so this has nothing to do with spin. These arrows here just indicate the direction the wave packet is going. So you have you have the superposition of this product state with one wave packet going up towards that corner, and then the other packet goes down to that corner. Okay, packet going like this, times the packet going like that, and plus the other situation that the particle goes that direction, and the other one goes up. If you now place mirrors at both sides, okay, you're going to have again this funny behavior, okay, basically because of the same reason as before, but now you have to do that in configuration space instead of physical space. So you again have this funny behavior at the both sides. If you don't place these mirrors here on the right-hand side, you won't have this funny behavior on the other side. Okay? So this illustrates the non-locality, because these mirrors can be placed really far away. Okay? And the guy on the right can decide at the last minute, just before the particles arrive, to place the mirrors there or not. And depending whether the mirrors are there, you get this funny behavior here or not. Okay? So this is the non-locality in Bohmian mechanics. So while this theory is non-local, as it has to be empirically adequate, as shown in the last lecture, you cannot use this non-locality to signal. Okay? How come? Well, the statistics here is always 50-50 to find it in up or down. Okay? The same is true here. It's 50-50 up or down. No matter if I always put the mirrors there, or I never put the mirrors there, or I make some combination of putting mirrors there or not, it doesn't matter. The statistic is always 50-50. Okay? And it doesn't matter where exactly I measure it, after this funny behavior or before, it's always 50-50. Bohmian mechanics is non-local in Bell sense, but you cannot use this non-locality to signal faster than the speed of light. And it's this non-locality that's going to give troubles in finding a relativistic extension of Bohmian mechanics. So now, relativistic space-time. So I'm going to focus primarily on just Dirac particles, just for simplicity. If you consider a single Dirac particle, I have the wave equation, which is just the Dirac equation. There's a natural guidance equation as follows. If I have x of s, which is just my word line with some parameterization s, doesn't really matter what this parameterization is. That's why this. I have this proportionality sign here. So this guidance law now for the Dirac equation just expresses that the tangent to this path is proportional to the current at that point on the path. Okay. And so the possible trajectories are just integral curves of this vector. And this vector, this is just it corresponds to what they call the charge current. This is just a four vector, so because these trajectories are integral curves of a four vector, this is completely Lorentz invariant. Okay. But non-locality doesn't come up yet, so this is only with more than one particle. So the trouble starts here. So if you have many particles, and you can assume now the wave function satisfies the many particle Dirac equation, then what should be a good guidance equation? Okay. Well, suppose you have some vector field on spacetime to the n, So each point x1 to xn is a point in Minkowski spacetime. Then we're looking for something of the usual form, okay, which expresses that tangent to this path is this velocity field evaluated at some points along these other particles' trajectory. Okay. And the question is exactly, suppose we're given such a velocity field, an actual velocity field, exactly at which points along these trajectories should we evaluate this velocity field? Okay. There's n trajectories. Along each trajectory, you could pick a point and evaluate the velocity field at that point. Okay. The simple thing, of course, to do is just assume a preferred frame of reference and evaluate this velocity field at the positions of the particles all at the same time, the time defined by this reference frame. Okay. So the velocity of one particle at this point is going to depend on the positions of the other particles at that time. Okay. But the problem here is that if you would choose different reference frames, you would have different trajectories. So clearly this is not Lorentz invariant. Okay. Although, on the other hand, in quantum equilibrium, the statistical predictions, these are Lorentz invariant. What does it mean? Well, you have a natural equilibrium distribution again, like in non-relativistic quantum mechanics. You have the psi squared distribution of particles on this equal time hypersurface. The psi squared distribution is going to be preserved. So at all times, you're going to have psi squared distribution. So you're going to have equivalence with ordinary quantum theory. If the ordinary predictions of quantum theory are Lorentz invariant, well, then so must be the predictions of this Bohmian theory. So what we have is this situation that we have something like empirical Lorentz invariance. So at statistical level, we have Lorentz invariance. But at the fundamental level, we don't. Okay? The trajectories depend on the frame of reference. And then it's the question, can we do better? Okay? Can we have a Lorentz invariance at a deeper level, at a more fundamental level? And here are some proposals by other people. So if you want to have some Lorentz invariant theory, and you want to, and instead of using equal time hypersurfaces to evaluate this velocity field, you could just use the structure that's already there in Minkowski spacetime. So you can use the light cone structure. Okay. What you can do is have the velocity field of, say, this particle depend on the crossings of the other trajectories along its backward light cone. Okay. So here in this case, there's no preferred reference frame, so this is Lorentz invariant. The trouble with this particular model by Squires is that while it's Lorentz invariant, it's going to be local. Okay. Causes are always in the backward light cone. Another proposal by Goldstein and Tomulka. Yeah, sure.
The Squires proposal then, I presume it can't reproduce the quantum mechanical statistical predictions. Right, okay, good.
Probably not.
Good.
I was going to say that in my...
It can't be. I mean, we know from Bell's theorem that it couldn't. So, okay, good.
That's exactly the reason why you give it up, and that was exactly the reason why Goldstein and Tomulka proposed the following alternative: use the forward light cone to evaluate the velocity field. So in this case, it's going to be non-local.
I'm asking: is that backward causation?
Yeah. Well, the position here is going to affect the velocity field here, so.
Can I quickly respond? Yes, there's backward causation, but no causal loops. You can actually prove it's consistent.
So this theory is now Lorentz invariant and non-local, as you would want for, if you want, that's what you want to violate the Bell's inequalities. But the trouble is that even this model, it's probably not going to agree with quantum mechanics. And the reason is that there's no such thing as a psi squared distribution that's preserved here. Okay, that was actually also true for the Squires model. So while it's Lorentz invariant and non-local, it's probably not good after all because it doesn't agree with quantum theory. Yep.
I'm not sure why you're calling that non-local. Yeah. There aren't influences from outside of the light cone. That is, there aren't influences from the elsewhere. There's I guess what you would call backward causation, but of what looks like a local variety. Is that the wrong way to think about it?
But causes are not always in the backwards light cone. This is non-local then.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I guess it's a matter of definition. I think
this is Bell.
If you allow the opposite direction, you can have any kind of non-local.
Right.
It's important that backward light cone be used in the formulation.
Is that right? You mean? Oh, right, you are. Good. Oh, because you also have causation from the... Yeah, good.
Was other questions?
Yeah. How could any of these theories agree with quantum mechanics? Because it's first quantized Dirac equations applied to many particle systems. Yeah, I thought this would not give
So that's
nice
a good question.
Results.
So... I'm just illustrating the issue with non-locality and Lorentz invariants. On the first quantized level, just n Dirac particles. I'll say something briefly about quantum field theory, but exactly the same stuff goes on in quantum field theory. And you might solve these problems in the same way as on the first quantized level. Okay. Another thing you can do is, this is basically a generalization of these using equal time hyperplanes, is generalize that to a foliation. So suppose you're given a foliation, you can say that the velocity of one particle depends on the crossings of these other world lines of leaves of the foliation, the leaf of the foliation that goes through that point. Okay?
You forgot Karin Berndl.
Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, so for now I haven't given much details, right? This was more or less valid for any kind of Bohmian-type particle theory. Didn't really specify what the wave equation was. Didn't really specify this velocity field. Let me just give briefly a little bit more details for those people interested. So this foliation, well, first of all, I'm going to need that later. That can be characterized by a future causal unit vector field, which is just a normal at each point. Through the leaf, through that point. Okay. And if I'm considering Dirac particles, what is this velocity field exactly? Well, this velocity field is actually going to depend on both wave function, but also on the foliation. And it's going to depend on the foliation in the following way. Here I have this tensor J. And this tensor J is, most compactly, it's expressed as follows. These psi's here, this is the usual Dirac field operator, okay, in the Heisenberg picture. And this is also the state, time independent state in the Heisenberg picture. And if you take this expectation value, which gives you a covariant tensor, J, that's the object I use in this guidance equation, in this velocity field. And I multiply that by this normal vector field at these points xi, okay, for all indices I except for k. Yep. Okay. So of course, what's the nature of this foliation now? If you just assume a foliation as extra space-time structure, that's as bad as choosing a preferred reference frame. Okay? This is going to violate Lorentz invariance. Okay? So this is definitely not going to be Lorentz invariant. Another thing one could think of is, well, maybe you can find a Lorentz invariant law for this foliation. Oops. One thing to do was say, okay, this normal vector field just satisfies this equation, doesn't depend on space or time. So this normal vector field is constant over space and time. So this defines a hyperplane foliation. And for the rest, this hyperplane foliation is arbitrary. Or another Lorentz invariant, trivial Lorentz invariant law is just to say that the foliation is arbitrary. Clearly, that's the Lorentz invariant statement. But this is not very interesting, right? This is just to make the point you can make any theory Lorentz invariant in such a way, so this is definitely not serious. Yeah. Better is the following thing. So this is, again, a Lorentz invariant law proposed by Tomuka. It's of this form. It just expresses that if you start from a space-like hypersurface, you can generate the other hypersurfaces in the other leaves in the foliation by just moving each point along its normal with the same distance. Okay. But more interesting than these previous things is to have, instead of having a separate law for foliation or regarding this foliation as something extra, you let the foliation be completely determined by the wave function. Okay? So you don't introduce extra space-time structure at all. You let the foliation be determined by the wave function. And if you want to have a Lorentz invariance, of course you want to do that in a Lorentz invariant way. So you want to have a map from wave functions to foliation, and you want this map to be covariant, which means the following. Well, if I transform the wave function with a Lorentz transformation, this diagram should commute such that the foliation also transforms under the corresponding Lorentz transformation. Examples of that, well, if you again look at the Heisenberg picture, and you have these field operators, Dirac field operators, psi, you can immediately construct stuff in space-time, right? Geometrical structures in space-time. So it must be kind of straightforward to extract some foliation in this way. And the first thing you might think of is consider again this charge current, total charge current. This is already future causal. Okay, so this is close, this is what we need, but it's not integrable, so it doesn't define a foliation. So as such, it's no good to define a foliation. You could think of taking the integrable part of that four vector, but then you're not sure this is going to be future causal. Okay, so maybe with some massaging you can get this to work, but the following example is more simpler and it works. So you just take the total. A simple example, you take a total four momentum four vector. So you just take the expectation value of the energy momentum tensor. Okay. And you integrate that over a hypersurface, a space-like hypersurface. And this quantity is independent of the exact space-like hypersurface you take, because the energy momentum tensor is conserved. And so the resulting four momentum, that's a space-time independent four vector. So it defines a foliation in terms of hyperplanes, which are orthogonal to this four vector. So not second quantized yet. I just used the formalism of quantum field theory. So my big psi, the wave function that contains just n particles. It was. That's the Dirac field operator, quantum field operator. I'm using the second quantized language, but I'm just restricting myself to a finite number of particles. But it is this very statistics, quantized. Yeah, exactly. Okay. So, and this way of having Lorentzian, I don't know how much time do I have left, or because I can skip this, the following part now. Okay, perfect. Okay. So this was suited for like the I just focused my attention on the Dirac particles just for simplicity, but Boolean mechanics can be extended to full quantum field theory. Okay, what people usually have done is just assume a preferred reference frame. And then there's actually a number of ways you can formulate a Bohmian theory for quantum field theory. Okay, and much about what I said about making these theories Lorentz invariants also applies for these theories. And let me just go briefly through what are possible extensions to quantum field theory. So if you want to extend Bohmian mechanics to full quantum field theory, one question you have to address is what kind of variables are you going to introduce? Because you're working with field theory now, you might think instead of having particle positions as being definite, maybe it's better to introduce field configurations instead. Okay. What seems to be the case for now is that particle position seems to be better working for Fermi field theory, and field configurations seem to be better working for bosonic field theory. So you need to make a choice of local variables, these particles or fields. Of course, you need a suitable relativistic wave equation. Okay, this is just what you get from quantum field theory books. And of course, you have to deal with this infinity somehow. So you introduce some regulators and so on. And then you have a number of Bohmian theories, which assuming all these regulators in place, assuming a lattice or cutoffs or whatever, these Bohmian theories then reproduce the quantum predictions of these regulated quantum field theories. Okay. And so, for example, for fermionic fields, this is work by these people. They have a model where you have particles, okay, and particles can be created and annihilated, as you would expect in usual quantum field theory. And this creation and annihilation is stochastic, so it's kind of an extension of Bohm theory. It's not deterministic anymore, but introducing this creation and annihilation introduces also some stochasticity. Another thing you can pursue is have some kind of Dirac-y picture, even for non-electromagnetic interactions, such as weak interaction. And then you can have like a deterministic model in terms of particle positions. And there's more models. Bell has a model, and so on. For bosonic fields, it seems to be easier to introduce fields as the local variables instead of particle positions. And Bohm already actually did that in the appendix of his 52 paper. He illustrated how you could introduce a field configuration for the electromagnetic field. So then you have a field configuration, the potential in this case, evolving under the guidance of the wave functional. And something like can be done for any bosonic field theory. And you see, for example, just to fix on this theory, so of course you can assume again a preferred frame of reference, okay? And you have this field moving over time in this reference frame according to some particular guidance equation. But you can generalize this guidance equation to arbitrary foliations such that the field evolves along that foliation. And in particular, you can again let this foliation be completely determined by the wave function. Actually, you can do it in exactly the same way as just mentioned before, using this energy momentum four vector. Okay. You can let the energy momentum four vector corresponding to the electromagnetic field determine the foliation. So here I'm to the summary of the talk. So you can formulate Lorentz invariant Bohmian theories, and you don't introduce extra space-time structure, okay, just had the Minkowski space metric. So in this theory, you just have what you would expect in a Bohmian theory, a wave function guiding the particles. And these models reproduce the standard quantum predictions. Okay. Of course, you can still question whether these two conditions, is that enough to talk about really a relativistic theory? You could add, you could ask for other requirements for a theory to be relativistic. For example, some people, of course, might ask that it should be local in Bell sense. Well, it would be a stupid thing to ask because then it cannot be a relativistic theory which is empirically adequate. Or one could ask that the only beables that the theory has are local beables. Okay, so Bohmian mechanics would not satisfy that criterion either because it has the wave function, a non-local beable. Okay, thank you.
I have a very naive question, but what are the beables of a quark?
Positions, particle positions.
Particle positions.
Yep. Natural thing, no?
So your ontology is going to because you have bosonic theory, then you have fields as primitive theory. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, but if you have fermions, then of course you have particles. Does that mean create problem for Bohmians, or you think it's not a problem at all? No. That,
well, it's
so
like
what
a
is the primitive ontology? Well, since, I mean, you have two different...
Yeah, well, it works, right? That's one thing, right? And of course you can combine them. I didn't say that explicitly, but of course if you have an interacting... If you have quantum electrodynamics, of course, you can introduce positions for the fermions, you can introduce a field for the electromagnetic field, or you could even introduce no electromagnetic field, just positions, something like Bell, something like that Bell proposed. So you have some options. And each theory works, but which one is the better? It's open for discussion.
Okay, thanks. Mm.
Well, I mean, in the field theory, these ordinary differential equations for the positions of the particles or for the fields become infinite systems. Mm-hmm. What's known about the mathematics? I mean, this looks all totally formal. Is there anything that can be lifted beyond the formal stage?
I don't know. So indeed, it's kind of formal. So that's why I said you introduce regulators, although you don't always do that explicitly.
Still infinite dimensional.
But I don't think the real problem in having a Bohmian theory for quantum field theory lies in these kind of problems.
I think that it does, because in the end, you would like to be able to do a calculation that can be compared with an experiment. Mm-hmm.
But people do lattice simulations, right? So these simulations are also compared to experiment. If I formulate my Bohmian theory on a lattice, I'm fine then, I guess, no?
No, that's not...
Yeah, but you see, the result of measurements will always be the same as they are in ordinary quantum field theory. In ordinary quantum field theory, we have mathematical problems anyway. I mean, they're... You take what four-dimensional quantum field theory really makes sense mathematically when you remove the cutoff. That's not so simple. But I had a question. How should I think about photons? So I should not think about photons as particles? Or what should I do?
Other
bosons, I mean.
Well, for now, the simplest thing is to think about it in terms of fields. But there's people working on models.
But are the fields
in terms of positions?
But are the fields producing particles, or what's the connection between fields and particles? I must say never.
Like if you have like double slit experiment or so, or
yeah, for example.
In that case, it's simply you refer to the detection of the photon that's going to be recorded in the particles and
which are the fermions.
And the field will probably be it will be spread out.
But you have a joint fermion boson theory where there are fermions which are particles and bosons are fields?
Yeah.
You have joint.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, he didn't combine them explicitly, but people have written that down.
He doesn't combine it there?
No, he just considers the free field, but people have done that. And, yeah.
My question is connected with the previous one. You have these experiments with photons, in particular with weak measurement, mm-hmm. where you can even identify a trajectory. Of course, mm-hmm. all of these can be explained in standard quantum mechanics, but can you explain with this field representation of photons?
But these trajectories wouldn't come out of the field configuration. So you're referring to the measure?
Be completely explained also in this form where you consider simply field for the electromagnetic.
Yeah. But of course you're not revealing the actual particle positions at each time, right?
Can you detect maybe in your theory the fact or the positive fact that the change of reference frame is
So I didn't choose any preferred reference frame in the first place, so... Do you mean, is this foliation somehow detectable?
No.
Because this foliation won't show up in, or this foliation won't show up in the statistics, so this foliation will be always hidden from you in quantum equilibrium.
I mean, I would have expected that if you talk about the Dirac equation, that you also talk about the positron. I mean, there would not be only one coordinate if you talk about the coordinates of electron, but also of the positron. In particular, you should be able to go back to the non-relativistic limit where you find the Pauli equation and two different sectors. So shouldn't one somehow have two coordinates in the end if you talk about the...
Just to consider the non-relativistic limit? Or? Well, I was talking about the Dirac theory, I was just using like n electrons, but I could have also assumed a combination of electrons and positrons, as long as the number is fixed, and I don't assume any interaction.
So you don't really make a difference between matter and antimatter at that level.
But that's for these models in quantum field theory, right? And there, in some models, there is a difference. In some models, like in a Dirac-y picture, you get a different picture than the positrons are holes. So let me rephrase that. So you have one model for Dirac quantum field theory where you have positions for electrons and for positrons, okay? And positions can appear, so electrons can appear, positrons can appear, and so on. Mm-hmm. And there's another model, which is different, takes this Dirac-y picture series. So you have a number of particles and that's always conserved, and whether a particle is an electron or positron, that more follows from how it moves than from, it doesn't really carry a label or anything. Mm.
I just want to see if there's a way of asking for more by way of Lorentz invariance in the way you were doing here. So look, take the sort of very old-fashioned theory that Bell mentions someplace. That's sort of in this spirit, you know, but very crude. Suppose the universe has some center of mass, you know, the mass of the universe is confined to some finite region. So you just say the preferred foliation is the foliation of hyperplanes relative to which the center of mass of the universe is at rest, okay? And, you know, in its deep structure, what the kinds of things we're talking about here aren't too different from that. They're much more elegant, they're much more general, but the idea is you let some sort of accidental physical features of the way the world happens to be determine the foliation. And I'm trying to formulate a way in which somebody could ask for more than that by way of in terms of Lorentz invariance. And I take it the idea would be something like this. If you look at a Lorentz invariant classical theory or something like that, it has this kind of completely geometrical formulation from beginning to end. And you can do any problem from beginning to end completely in the geometrical language in such a way that no surrogate for simultaneity ever comes up in the course of doing the calculation, that you never need to identify any kind of equivalence class of space-time points at space-like separations or something like that. That's what we're used to from classical Lorentz invariant theories. That's what's true of Maxwellian electrodynamics. And I take it that's even what's true of Roddy's version of GRW, and seems not true here. I don't know. Do you think that's a reasonable? Do you think somebody who says that's the real spirit of Lorentz invariance, if not the letter? What do you think about that?
What you said sounds reasonable indeed. So I agree with that.
Let me add one thing to it. It might be better in thinking about questions like that to maybe distinguish between Lorentz invariants and relativistic. Say, like, well, is that really relativistic? And no, maybe you convince yourself that's perfectly Lorentz invariant, but I still don't think it's relativistic.
Right. You mean relativistic is the stronger requirement?
Yeah, it demands more.
Yeah. Good. In the spirit of relativism.
Okay, thanks. Right. Thomas, please.
Yes, I have no problem with the Bohmian interpretation in first quantization, where you say that the hidden variable is the position, and at the same time you say that every measurement results to a measurement of a position. But in this case, if you talk about bosons, and in particular photons, and that you say that the variable is the field, then it will mean that every measurement result can be expressed like a homodyne detection or something like that. So I begin to have problems. The connection with the measurement is not clear at all.
But the measurement setup is not only made of bosons, right? So in a
fundamental but then you must not talk about hidden variables for the bosons. You just look at
you
the
don't
fermions.
Need to. Exactly, you don't need to. That was Bell's point in one of his papers. Having some stuff.
Yeah, but then it's not necessary to talk about Bohmian interpretation for the bosons. You don't need it.
You don't need it.
Thank you. I have 10 seconds comment.
Okay.
Fermions are isomorphic with spins. If you can treat spins in the Bohmian language, then you can. Perhaps treat fermionic fields as well. But the issue is there.
That's a good idea, and people have explored that, actually. Peter Holland proposed a model which basically uses that idea. Yeah. But it doesn't work in the end, for certain reasons.
Thank you.